Looking Forward Our Way podcast addresses today's critical issues affecting adults in Ohio. We focus on issues that affect our money and our neighborhoods. Our expert guests are here to provide the information and resources needed to address those challenges. Hi, this is Brett. Many in our neighborhood are approaching retirement age, but not quite ready to completely leave employment and a paycheck. Our guest today is going to tell us about his journey to create a new career path for himself while also filling a critical need in the community. Please welcome Mark Mattson, residential concierge. We don't get to say concierge.
I know. Isn't that a cool word?
Yeah. Welcome, Mark. I can't wait to hear more about that title. It's very cool.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Mark, thank you so much for being with us today. We're excited to hear about the journey you've taken. We get into a lot of details when we're going through our phases in life. And when you're trying to hit a new adventure, you're never really sure, you know, what the next steps are going to be. So before we get into what you're actually doing, we'd like to hear about your background and sort of the steps that you've taken to move into this encore, quote unquote, retirement job.
Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to spend this time with you. I'm one of those, I remember back when I was a kid, I remember when it was time to decide where to go to college and what to study. I was one of those kids that was like, I don't know. And I always envied people who knew from an early age what it was they wanted to be, disciplined themselves, and they became the concert pianist that they imagined themselves to be. That's not my experience. And, you know, just a little bit of my background, you can see it. I have a bachelor's degree in urban geography. I went from that to become a congressional aide in D.C., and then I went from that to become a ranch hand out in Colorado. And then I went into the seminary and I studied to be a priest. And I came out from that and I ended up going to Ohio State University, where I got my degree in labor relations and human resource management. That's where I settled and spent 30 some years of my life in that career. And it was a good career for me. I started out as an intern in a local company and spent 17 years there and ended up as the director of human resources. So I learned a lot in that whole process. I also have been involved a lot in leadership organizations in a variety of charities in Central Ohio, and I've learned a lot about the community that way. I'm not a native of Columbus, grew up in Colorado, lived in D.C., lived in Boston, and ended up here going to the Ohio State. And like a lot of people, you don't leave after you get your degree. You become a Buckeye. Gets into your blood, right? But I mentioned charitable organizations because one of those is an organization called Ohio Living, which is the largest provider of senior housing, continuing care communities in the state of Ohio. And I was a chairman of the board of that organization, learned a whole lot about the phase of life that we're talking about today, which is quote-unquote retirement. Ohio Living used to be called the Presbyterian Retirement System. And they changed their name while I was on the board intentionally because their residents didn't like the word retirement anymore, because we're living much longer than we used to. And people now look at that phase of life after you leave your career, 65 or older, could be 55 or older, as an opportunity to live life differently than you have before. And I think that's what we're here to talk about today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got a long relationship with Ohio mm-hmm. Living. Joe Roble, we're going to give a shout out to him, has been a guest on our podcast and a supporter of the program. And it is. It really, when they were going through that change, it was really looking at that notion of, you know, retirement sounds like the end, but in actuality, we're all just going through one transition after another transition
exactly.
into something different. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to get to today's topic, I want to talk about how my 30-some years in human resources came to an end, because it wasn't a planful sort of thing. Part of my job, and the part I didn't like very much, was about planning and conducting reductions in force. When a company has to make adjustments because of the financials of the organization or perhaps strategy changing or whatever. And I would often know in that role, working with the CFO, long before the RIF happened, who was involved. And of course, that was all entirely confidential. So it's part of my job. But I did that 3 years in a row in an organization that was contracting. And then the fourth year, looking at the financials of the organization and the cost of labor, I realized that senior management had not yet chipped in to the effort.
I like that.
We'd been cutting billable staff, and that didn't make sense to me. And so, long and short of it, I made the decision the company didn't need a vice president of organization development any longer. And I had been grooming someone to be my successor who would be much less expensive on the payroll and I thought was capable of taking over the responsibilities for what was a smaller organization than when I came on board. And so basically I fired myself. I put my job on the cutting block knowing that I would qualify for severance and unemployment and that would help bridge me. Another important point to make, because it sounds like a noble thing to do, but I was also burned out. Mm-hmm. I was tired of this. I could feel it inside of me, and I'm not a quitter, but this was an opportunity to move on because my body, literally, my body was telling me this isn't any fun anymore. And finally, I'm single. I didn't have a family that was dependent upon me financially, and I was a saver. And so it was easier for me to take that risk. So that kind of brings us to the point when I jumped off, the career that I had for 32 years.
And your story is different in that you were part of the guide to make the ending happen. But so many individuals in our age range have had to go through this where they have been riffed or companies completely closed. When I took over at Employment for Seniors, we had thousands of people, mid-managers, looking for work, which had never happened before. Because as you said, management is normally not who is affected. That's and right. It's very difficult for people to move to the next phase. And often they think the next phase is going to be the same as what they have done. And so you had an opportunity to do something different.
Correct.
Yeah. Wonderful.
You know, and again, we said this before we started recording, we're going to go down rabbit holes a little bit, but I got to make a comment on that, just thinking that I know people, people in what your position was, knowing can see the future and know exactly, yeah, they're going to be gone in X amount of months or a year, whatever the case might be. It's too bad that we can't have a society that would actually let those people know at that point in time. So they had a chance to at least have many more months ahead of time to look for something and to be prepared for it versus what you hear today of like, what was it? Just I heard recently that a company is going to be downsizing and by the end of December, they're gone. And, you know, as we record the very beginning of November, it's like, again, you know, the company's doing it. But you don't know if your name is on that list.
No. That's why we have to be agents for ourselves.
Yeah.
I think all of us know that our parents' generation, my father worked for the same company for 40 years. That was the norm. Mm-hmm. You had a contract, kind of an implied contract.
Yeah.
You know, I'll take care of you, you take care of me. Those days are long gone, right?
Long gone.
And so each of us as an employee have to be advocates for ourselves. Part of my role with doing reductions in force or just handling terminations, was working with outplacements firms to help people to do that, affect that bridge. Mm. So I have that in my background as well in terms of how outplacement firms help people across that divide, hopefully, to a better place on the other side.
And, you know, it goes back to a message that we've had from other guests who are experts in helping people find employment is you are always a job seeker. Because as you said, it's not the norm. I retired from Ohio State after 30 years with the state of Ohio. That doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. And if you are not advocating for yourself and really look at your role as constantly looking for another opportunity, you're going to be behind the eight ball.
Yeah. Well, so many boomers have reached or are nearing retirement, some moving with excitement, others with trepidation. We often hear individuals wishing they had a plan, quote unquote, of what to do in retirement. They would feel likely more excited about it. How do you envision retirement for yourself?
That's a great question. So I was kind of starting to think about that. I was 62 when this change happened in my life. So 3 years before I would qualify for Medicare, and 4 years before I would qualify for Social Security, because I wanted to take it when I could get the optimum benefit. And so I had a succession plan I was putting in place, and I was also envisioning myself to be an executive leadership coach. And I pursued certification from an organization called Coach Academy and acquired that certificate. So my thought was is that when I've wrapped up my career in human resources, I would then go on, because a lot of my work involved working with leaders and doing leadership training and coaching. It seemed like a natural thing for me to do. And when I left the organization and started the next change, by the way, there's been so many intersections in my life where I've said, well, what now?
No. What he just put at the very beginning of going to preschool, basically.
Right.
No, yeah, I can't imagine him just sitting in front of a mirror going, what now, Mark?
Yeah, right. Exactly. What now? So I had an offer from an organization that would take me in that direction of coaching, and I started seriously investigating it, but my heart wasn't into it, and I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get the energy for it. Part of it was that I would have to market myself as a coach. And I'm marketing just that, no, I'm not into self-promotion. I don't know how to do this. I don't want to do it. But it was more than that. And I think it was fatigue with people problem solving. I had done so much of that, you know, over time, and I was good at it. So I had developed those skills very well, but my body was, I just didn't have the enthusiasm for it. So my plan was in place, but my heart wasn't there. And I really wanted something different. And that, the next part of this story about how that opportunity presented itself. So it wasn't in my plan, starting to just listen to my heart.
When you're saying that you were sort of starting to think about retirement, and age is an issue, the difference in our retirements, when I retired from Ohio State, I was only 54. But the retirement system provided insurance for us.
Yes.
So I had 11 years before I could get onto Medicare. And that is critical. And when Congress missed that opportunity to reduce the age on Medicare, it made a difference in a lot of people who are really thinking about doing early retirements from their current career path and moving to something different, but needing that little bit of stability. It makes a huge difference for somebody who is wanting to make a change. The other thing, too, when I left my position with nonprofit management, I was tired, but I also, it was like I couldn't take on one more burden from another person. And that was where, so folks were saying, you could write grants and you could do resume reviews. And I'm like, nah, no, I don't want to do that.
I could do it.
Yes. That doesn't mean I want to.
Right.
Exactly. So yeah, Mark and I have had some great conversations along these lines.
You bring up a really good point about medical insurance. That's a huge inhibitor.
Absolutely.
And very daunting. And that's why I mentioned that I was single. You know, if I'd had people dependent on me, I may not have made the decision that I made.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, that was the scariest part of the transition. I knew that I could access medical care. I could access my company's medical care, but at the cost.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about a $500 a month increase that I'd have to come up with. At the same time, I'm taking a huge pay cut. So the natural instinct was to find to replace what I had been doing with a job that was similar that I would knew I could do. And I did attempt. I did actually interview and came close to two different HR executive positions. And in hindsight, I was spared in both of them when I did not receive it. One of those, this was just before COVID. And in one of them, I would have been hired just in time to start laying a whole bunch of people off. So mm-hmm. I kind of see that as divine intervention in a way, right? But I just want to say at the beginning of this journey, I thought, that's one of the things I thought, how am I going to do this? And I really was, I have to do this a month at a time. I couldn't look too far down the road because it was too daunting. So in the background, I had a friend who was encouraging me to take another leap, which was, we were having dinner one night. This was a woman named Mary that I knew from church. Mary had gone through a similar thing. She's about 20 years older than I am, or 15, something like that. You'd never know it, but different generation. But she left a high-paying career as well. And she is today an interior decorator and has been doing that for about 15 years and so forth. And that was her big leap when she did it. Now, in her case, she had a husband with an income. So that was, you know, each of us has our own different circumstances. But over dinner, she said, have you ever thought going in business for yourself? And I just looked at her like she's nuts. And I said, no, maybe for 10 seconds I've thought about that. You ought to think about that. You could do what I do. You know, you could be, you can help be an interior designer. I said, I don't know anything about that. She said, yes, you do. She said, I see it every time I walk in your house. It's just natural to you. You don't even think about it as a skill set. And I said, Mary, I have been on someone else's payroll my entire life. I don't know anything about running a business. I'm not good at accounting. And you could just list all the, I can't this, I can't that, I don't know this, and so forth. And she said, stop. She said, I want you to just think about this and see where your heart's at in it. She said, I didn't know those things either, and you'll learn it one step at a time, one day at a time. Everything I know now, I was taught by other people in the field, you know, and so forth. So that really planted a seed in my mind about something I'd never considered. Then I started talking to other people who were small business people. Oh yeah, I didn't know anything about that either, you know, but I found this great accountant. She keeps me out of trouble with the IRS and so forth. You know, you want her name? And somebody else said, I can give you the name of an attorney that can get you incorporated and help you through the whole thing with incorporating in the state and so forth. And somebody can help me with taxes. And these were all things that were very daunting to me. I just throw a few of those out because these happened step by step, conversation by conversation. It wasn't a grand plan. It evolved, and it really was a journey of faith. I had to believe every day that I could do this. So one of the things I did was set up my little home office, and I went out to Hobby Lobby or someplace like that and bought some those wooden letters that you can get, and I put across my wall by my desk, it says, I can and I will. They're still there. Mm-hmm. I looked at it every day, and then I created what I called a wall of inspiration. And it really was shelf paper that I hung from the ceiling to the floor. And every time I heard something that would inspire me, give me hope, and so forth, I would write it down, on that. And, I'm looking at some notes that I brought in because I had some quotes, from that. Oh, here's one. It's every exit is an entry somewhere else. On your deathbed, will you regret trying this or regret not trying it?
Unless it kills you.
Yes, if it kills you, that's right. Might get you there sooner. Might get you there. But then, you know, whatever.
No, yes, exactly.
But it was an adventure getting there. Yeah.
Well, I thought about that. I thought, you know, I would regret this if I didn't take this risk and try it. And then another one was, when I let go of who I am, I become what I might be. When I let go of what I have, I receive what I need. So those are some examples of things that kind of helped me each day and so forth. So we'll get into kind of how I got into residential concierge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to jump back here a second, though, too, without disparaging or underestimating underestimating your thought process in this journey. I want to commend you for your research, because even having dinner with your friend, talking to other small business people, I think that individuals shortchange themselves by immediately saying, I can't do that, without putting the few steps it takes to do some research.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved from having been on a payroll for the state of Ohio for 30 years and jumped into nonprofit management, had I known, I may not have done it, but I just jumped in with all faith and said, oh yeah, I can figure this out. It is running a business. A nonprofit is running a business. Mm-hmm. And although you think you're on a payroll, well, you're not on a payroll if you're not out there making the money to meet that payroll. So it is a lot of research and a lot of finding out how to do things and getting people to help you through that process.
Mm-hmm. And that's the each day.
Right.
So the thing that I thought about was the story of the Israelites in the desert. They're going from something they wanted to leave, Egypt, no fun, right? And we're going to promised land, right? But in that story, the Israelites got very nervous a lot of different times. But there's a prayer that we say, a lot of us do, the Lord's Prayer. It says, give us this day our daily bread. That comes right from the story in the desert when manna was provided to the tribe of Israel every day. What I remembered was, give us this day our daily bread, not a week's supply, mm-hmm. not a month's supply. It was the day. So I would remind myself in the morning when I got up, what am I going to do today? And as I went further and further along, things unfolded I didn't expect when I started the day. Like running into somebody for lunch who said, I've got an accountant that could really help you. And then at the end of the day, I would take count of what happened during the day and the things that were unexpected. What blessing came that day? What was the manna? And then wake up the next day and think, what's this day going to bring? And that's how this, what I'm doing now, unfolded gradually. Rather than starting with a plan in place, which I might have done if I was going to actually open up a storefront, right, mm-hmm. and sell lamps, for example, then I couldn't have done this way. So, but today is about my story.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that, and you did this in some fashion of letting the universe know you're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But talking to people.
Put the intention out there.
Right. And all of a sudden, the universe takes care of you.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you a lead. Like, I know an accountant, you know, that sort of thing. I when I started my business, I did that on purpose, reading the books that you're supposed to read, and really felt that's like, yeah, the twofold. Number one, putting it out in the universe, you're going to do this. Secondly, you have all these other people holding you accountable.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to ask you,
mm-hmm.
How's it going? And you don't want to lose face going, I haven't done anything with it today.
Right. But tomorrow.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, Brett was my worldview when I took over employment for seniors as a member of our board. I used to be able to sell the university's courses. But that was kind of easy because I had all the resources I needed to do that. So now I'm walking into a nonprofit and I become the voice in the face of a nonprofit. And he's the one who taught me to sell our nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so.
And true.
That's
sponsorships and.
Right.
And the like, that there was value to what the nonprofit was doing to somebody.
Yes.
Right.
An organization that they want to ride that gravy train to.
Mm-hmm.
That it made sense for them to be a part of because it's a good thing.
And it really was, our journey mm-hmm. really was day by day.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
we
yeah.
did a little bit each day.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I guess what I'm hoping that the message is to the audience today is The world is your oyster, but that doesn't mean you don't have to make yourself accountable to others. Let the world know what you're doing. But also, for me, getting that research in, getting that networking in, that really makes a difference in how you can be successful. So when you first started and you were talking about all these wonderful jobs that you had, congressional, you were working in Congress. I was an intern in Congress. There's nothing more cool than being able to walk around.
That's when I decided I didn't want to be a politician.
Oh, exactly. Yes, those are the experiences that really teach you. Working on a ranch, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
You, as an HR person, really understand how skills can be created, honed, developed, transferred into new areas. So let's talk about when you were starting out on this new adventure, how did you evaluate your abilities to do this? And how did you determine what you had to learn?
Yeah, well, you mentioned being an HR professional. That kind of gave me a lead, because part of human resource management is always assessing skills, somebody else's or your own. And a lot of my career was focused on training and development, so building those skills and so forth. And so, you know, I have at home a binder about 3 inches thick that has all these assessments I've taken over the years. I have been assessed and performance appraisals and tested, and I have all
sliced
these
sliced and diced.
Yes, I have the binder full of these things. So, like, I have a life transition planning guide I put together. I did something called the Berkman on strengths and needs. I have the Myers-Briggs type indicator. By the way, I'm an ENFPJ. I couldn't even decide. I wasn't even clear on some of those things. There's the DISC style and conflict, Enneagram, I'm a type 6 loyalist, Firo B, love languages, you name it. Okay, so I had, what I'm trying to say is that I had accrued over time in my career lots of assessments saying what my strengths were, what my weaknesses were, and so forth. And then when I left, I worked with an HR consulting firm to develop a course called Career Encore. And I didn't know that there are such things as retirement coaches. So there are coaches out there that help people at this stage of life as well. I looked at my bucket list in that process. I looked at health and finances, relationship priorities. I did value sort, looked at a life retrospective. I was even encouraged to do interviews of people in retirement, to ask them, you know, how's it been? What have you learned about this process and so forth? One of those people was my older brother, Rick, who's 10 years older than I am and was retired. He was a nuclear physicist. And he said his one regret was retiring early without any plan. So this gets to your point about a plan. I didn't have a plan in the way of having a 5-page thing saying with 7 steps and I'm going to do this and that. He just left the lab and thought he was going to, I think, fertilize the lawn and different things. And that didn't work out for him. So I learned something about that. And I interviewed another friend of mine who was in his 80s. He was a guy that I ride my motorcycle with a lot. His name is Jack. And he had his own business, very successful business that he left. But he said to me, retirement as it's defined is a disease because it implies stopping. His advice to me was, don't stop, Mark. When you retire from your job, see it as an intersection with many new possibilities, not a cul-de-sac. And that's what my brother, I think, he found himself in a cul-de-sac.
Oh, I like that, yeah.
By the way, Jack is now teaching leadership to people in the performing arts at Columbia University in New York City. He flies back and forth from Cincinnati. But this is quite a stretch from what he was doing before.
Nice. Wow. So with all those assessments that you have a 3-inch binder for, and this will lead to the question kind of twofold. Number one, was there a common thread, though I know each assessment kind of tells you something different though. Was there a common thread that you got from it, if you could look back over it, or maybe it's too much over your career to kind of see, but you know, did that help, or, you know, when you started going on your own, I mean, what helped you take that leap of faith in yourself? Was it the 3-inch binder knowing, okay, this 3-inch binder tells me I can do it? Mm-hmm. Or what helped you create, you know, get that leap of faith to do it?
One of the things the 3-inch binder told me is that I have a lot of creativity, which was curbed in many ways by business. You know, and it helped me in my business, but that I had this creative side to me. I mentioned to you that Mary mentioned something about interior decorating. When she said that, there was something inside of me that said, yes, but I don't know anything about it, right? And I thought about this before our conversation. I first started to think I'm not a risk taker. And then I looked back at my life and I thought, no, that's not exactly true. That's how I ended up on a ranch in Colorado. I had gone out to start an MBA program, and it took me 7 weeks to realize I was in the wrong place. That's what everybody did back in the 80s when you didn't know what to do, is you got a master's in business administration. And then I ended up being a caretaker on a 68-acre ranch, taking care of horses and pigs and cows and stuff. And I knew nothing about that either. I was a city boy, but the owner of the ranch taught me, and it was one of the best years of my life.
How did you leave that then? Why?
Because I couldn't have made a living doing.
But because it sounds so...
It was great.
Nice. Yeah. It does, yeah.
So anyway, my point being, I think that I am a person of faith, and I've often... I've taken leaps in the past, but often because I had to, life kind of pushed me, kind of like having a pirate with a weapon and you're on the plank sort of thing. Kind of that's how I left my HR career, right? But when I was running, when I was in high school, I remember I ran for student body president and I had to give a speech. And I was asking my father for some inspiration, and he gave me this poem, which I recommend to people listening today. Look it up on the internet. It's called It's All in the State of Mind by a gentleman named Walter Winkle. It'll come right up in your search. But it starts out and says, if you think you are beaten, you are. If you think that you dare not, you don't. If you'd like to win but think you can't, it's almost certain you won't. Think big and your deeds will grow. Think small, and you'll fall behind. Think that you can, and you will. It's all in the state of mind. And that came back to me. That's why I have the sign in my office that says, I can and I will. That I knew a lot of what was ahead of me was a mind game, and it was also about the heart. It was about following my heart to my next step. What was really in my heart? Human resources, when I got into it, was really a practical thing. I need something to pay the bills and do something. And it was a good fit for me. But let me just tell you kind of the next part of the story, which is a friend of mine who held a high position at Ohio State University was in the midst of a big change in his life. And I got connected through mutual friends because of my interest in leadership coaching. And we shared the same faith, so we had kind of that in common and so forth. In any case, part of his big change was separation from his wife, after raising 3 kids. And, he was at one of those intersections. Well, what now? Sort of thing. And, he ended up, for various reasons, purchasing a home for himself, a 6,000 square foot home on an acre of land. And I was 100 years old. And I thought he was nuts because he was 62 at the time, too. I said, this is not what people do at our point in life, right? Where he comes into my story is he said to me, while you're trying to figure out what you're going to do with the rest of your life, would you be interested in being my project manager? What do you have in mind? He said, every time I come home to this lovely old home, it depresses me because there's so much that needs to be done and I have no time. I can't wait around for a plumber between 2 and 5 to show up at the house. He had a very demanding job. And he said, so you're interested in homes, old homes. What if I gave you a list of all the things that I think need to be done on this place? And you apply your HR skills. You do the talent searching. You go out and you find the people that have the skills to do what needs to be done. You screen them. You bring me recommendations just like you did to your hiring managers. I'll make the decision on who I hire. And then he said, you'll be my representative because I can't be at the home when I have carpenters in the house or plumbers in the house and so forth. And I want you to supervise because I know you know homes. And that resonated with my heart because I do love homes. I've always loved home improvement. I like working with my hands, and I'd been working a lot with my head through my career. And so I said, yeah, I can do that while I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. Now, I'd already had the conversation with Mary about starting my own business and so forth. And so those two things started happening at the same time. But the most important part, as I recounted the story, was one day I was working in a particular room in the house that had all this wonderful, plaster work in it and crown molding and so forth. And I'm admiring the craftsmanship in the home. I'm also painting. Okay. Now, I like to paint. A lot of people don't, but I like to paint because I can actually see the results of my labor. In human resources or working with people, it's anybody's guess. In a particular day, whether you've had any impact or not, you know, but when you paint a room, at the end of the day, you can step back and say, oh, much better. I've actually done something here, right? In this particular day, I had music playing and I was painting and I was singing. And I caught myself singing. And I said, when was the last time you were singing at work? And I will never forget that day. And so as this project went along, I found it very enjoyable. And I found I was good at it. And I loved managing projects. And I loved the people that I was meeting, the skilled craftsmen and so forth. It was taking me into worlds that I'd never explored before. And I'm meeting people that are really interesting people, an upholsterer, you know, or a plaster repairman, and just talking to them. And so that's how I got started. And then it's like, well, can I market this? Or, I mean, how can I make a life out of this? Okay. I never did develop a marketing plan because I didn't have to. It spread by word of mouth. This gentleman, neighbors said, you know, who's this person you got working over there all the time for you? You know, so he'd tell him about what I was doing and so forth and said, I need somebody like that, you know. And so that's how my business got started. I came up with the term residential concierge because I loved being helpful. He threw all kinds of things at me. He decided that he wanted to be a beekeeper. So I needed to find out about beekeeping. And turns out I was the one that received the shipment of bees when they came and so forth. That's what I mean by getting into things I would never get into, and I can go on with a long list. A concierge at a hotel, what do you do when you look for the concierge? Why do you seek a concierge at a hotel?
So you don't get lost.
That's one.
In a town that you don't know.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Find the best things, best people, best places.
Yeah. Where's a good place to eat? Mm-hmm. Where can I find a good show? Mm-hmm. You know, how can I catch a cab? What's this, that, so forth.
Or shouldn't I go?
Yes. Where shouldn't I go? Yes. Right. Yeah. You want somebody who knows the territory, right? Can help you out. Yeah. And I thought, that's what I'm doing here. I have someone who has a home that they love, and they have problems with the homes. They are improvements that they want to make. They want to get from where we are current state to something different. Might be an addition to the house, you know, or whatever. It might be moving from the house to a new house. How? And so that's what I would do. I would find all the answers to people's questions about how do I get this done? How do I get a piano tuned? Where do I find somebody to repair a grandfather clock that my great grandfather gave me? You know, how do I... et cetera, et cetera. And so I thought, I'm a concierge for homeowners. And that's how I came up with the term. Actually, it was the guy that helped me develop my website and my business cards. That was the two steps I had to take. I had to come up with a name for my business, too, in order to get incorporated in the state of Ohio. So I picked at the time Forward Focus because I was going to do coaching. And it was about, the idea was that I would help people get from their current state to a desired future state, you know, so we look forward. And I thought, that's exactly what I'm doing with homeowners, as I'm helping them get from their current state, house that needs a new roof, to one that has a new roof, and help them get from point A to point B.
Of the many skills and abilities honed over the years, which provided the tools you needed to develop your new career path? Were there any surprises along the way? Did you have a surprise hidden talent that kind of go, I can do that? Beyond the singing.
Yeah, I'm not talented at that. I'm fine when I'm on my own sort of thing. In this process, the skills that were applicable were my talent management skills. I've already mentioned. So finding talent, screening it, placing it, and developing talent. I would say my emotional intelligence. In my human resources careers, I had a lot of dicey conversations with people, and often trying to bridge understanding between manager and direct report, or between conflict and direct reports and team training and so forth. But I had, I started learning those when I was a kid in my family, you know, in terms of bridging people in the family and so forth. So I call it my EQ. And then listening. I'm a natural, I'm naturally curious, but I'm also empathetic, and I'm curious about why people behave the way they do, how they react to different things, why they act and so forth. So it makes me, I ask good questions and I listen. Well, that's a really important thing in customer service. When I'm talking to a client, is my ability to ask questions and draw out what it is they really want and how they want it and so forth. And then listening, of course, to the response. Or I often carry messages between skilled craftspeople and the owner of the home. So I just did that yesterday, working on the repair of a low-voltage lighting system. And I met with the electricians, and I learned how the whole thing was laid out and how it worked with the transformer and so forth, so that I, later today, can convey it to the homeowner. Problem-solving. I learned that I never thought of myself as a project manager when I was in business, but I love it. I love being given a problem, and I love finding the resources and finding a solution. It's very satisfying work. And then leading teams. The hidden talent I think I discovered through all this is that I can be a CEO.
Yeah.
I didn't think I could run my business. And here I am. I've been doing it successfully. I remember the end of my first year when I paid off the taxes, you know, closed up the year. And because I went month to month, every month when I would bill and do my invoices, I would think, all right, I've made it another month. I'm a month closer. I even had a big thermometer in one of my rooms with going down the months till I could qualify for Medicare and stop paying so much for my health insurance. Okay, another month. Oh, I've only got 9 months to go. Okay, 8 months to go, so forth. But I learned I could do something I thought was really not possible when I started.
So all of those skills you learned after.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the process.
Which we've talked many, many times prior to moving out, to moving on, knowing your transferable skills, those soft skills, to kind of recognize them. And I think that's a good example. You may not recognize them until you actually get into that new job, or at least back here in the back of your head, you probably knew them, and then they come to the front. But I'm not saying not to try to recognize them prior, but sometimes they're not evident until you go out and do it.
And I think that we have a lot of skills that we don't see how they transfer into a new situation.
Right. Right. I'm meaning that, really, when it comes down to it.
One of the skills I thought you might mention that you didn't was negotiating. I mean, HR folks are always negotiating, and basically that's what you're doing in this job, too.
Right.
Completely different context of the use of that skill, but it's still the same skill. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always used to tell folks, students, when I first started in grad school at Ohio State and I was an academic advisor, and they would grumble because they had to take a chemistry course or they had to take, you know, a philosophy course or a history course. And I said, you know, there isn't anything I have ever learned in a classroom that I haven't sometime utilized. I hated high school chemistry, absolutely hated it. But in my first job in private industry, I get a call from the president of the company that says, I'm going to have one of the chemistry faculty at Ohio State do this for me. I need you to go over, talk to them, explain it, blah, 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 and get the information back to me. On a high school chemistry class, I did that. I mean, you learn to learn. You're not only learning skills, but you're learning to learn as you grow up. And you have to mm-hmm. take advantage of all of those opportunities because it's never going to be a waste of time.
No, that's true. And I think also the part about heart, I've lived so much of my life in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was an opportunity to really pay more attention to that other sense organ, my heart. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed what I was doing. So one day I was refinishing the front door of this 100-year-old home, which in itself is a work of art. I mean, it just sits on heavy iron hinges because it's so heavy. It's solid oak, you know, with the big brass knocker on it and so forth. And I'm putting, sanding it down and giving it a new life of black enamel paint. It's coming back to life. But I'm thinking about all the people who have gone through that door. Over 100 years. And this is the first part of the house. It was the part of the house. So I think of it as a house having a personality. This was the welcome post, you know, to the house and so on and so on. So it gave me a lot of pleasure working on it. So at the face value, it's like, oh, I got to paint the front door. But for me, that door was about history. And I was contributing to, you know, I was putting a lipstick back on the front door or something mm-hmm. you want to call it. Why do I bring that up? Because there were many experiences where I thought, I'm loving this. I love what I'm doing. And when you love what you're doing, then the things that you're not so good at doing, like invoicing and doing tax forms and all that sort of stuff, they become bearable. I wanted to learn because I wanted to enable my ability to do what I was loving.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's an old saying about if you love what you're doing, it's not really work.
Mm.
Part of that is, too, that when you were working for companies on somebody's payroll, mm-hmm. you might have enjoyed the tasks you were doing, but the underlying goal was for the company. When you're doing it for yourself
mm-hmm.
and you're the underlying mm-hmm. goal, it really makes a huge difference in terms of success, rate of success for sure. And it's not just loving the task. It's loving the fact that you're the basis of it. As you said, your heart.
Yeah. And I love being my own boss.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Because I have so much more flexibility with my schedule now. And I knew that the next phase of my life, I already mentioned my older brother, who was in early stages of Alzheimer's. He was out in Denver long ways. I knew I wanted to have more time to be able to go out and support his wife and support him in this transition. And I wanted to work less. I wanted to cut down from 55 hours a week. And so forth. And so what I'm doing now has enabled me to set my own schedule. I can take on the number of clients I want and I can stop. I have to stop myself. That's a job because mm-hmm. I have a tendency to say yes. I can fire a client if it's incompatible. If I haven't had to do that, but if I did, if there was something, for example, I will not be treated with disrespect. And if I had somebody who was treating me that way, then I would say, I don't think this is going to work. You know, that's what I mean about like being my own boss. I'm mm-hmm. More master of my domain. And it has worked out very well. I have a great flexibility in my schedule. I'm able to do the things I want to do with my family. I have more time to take up things that are new. for me. So like drawing, I took my first drawing class. Once again, I thought, I haven't a clue what I'm doing. And I keep reminding myself, I'm a beginner. It's okay to be a beginner at this point in life. The natural tendency is to avoid, I think, things that we don't know, that we're not good at. It's like, I'm a right-handed, I write with my, but you can, I can learn how to write with my left hand. It just feels clumsy and awkward. And so you tend not to do it. You go back to the right hand because that's what's comfortable with. So it's like that with other things. Another thing I took up was swimming. I was not a good swimmer. And I thought, I want to be a better swimmer. And so I joined, you know, an adult swimming class at the Worthington Rec Center. And it's a little humbling to get into the pool with people that are 30 years younger than you or whatever, you know. But again, it's that state of mind poem that I just read about. I said, you know, we're not here. You're not being evaluated.
You're not going to the Olympics
anymore. You don't have someone, you're going to have a performance review here, you know, so forth and so on. You're just learning to swim.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm doing a mile an hour in my laps and stuff. So, but I had the time to do it. That's the point that I wanted to make.
Yeah.
And it enabled me to explore other sides of myself that I've neglected.
So where is this all taking you? Where do you see yourself, I don't know, next year, the year after, 5 years?
So next year I will turn the big 70. I'm thinking I want more time. I want time to take a cross-country trip. I want to be able to go with no schedule. I want to stop in and see different friends that I've acquired across the years in Louisiana and Iowa and California and wherever they might be. I want to go to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and stuff. So I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking maybe I'm ready to kind of wind this down and stop working. But I don't know, because I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. So I'm not sure, but I'm not looking to build my business. The universe has provided for me over and over and over again. Every month when I would think, well, I got through this month and I would see very little in my pipeline of business for the coming month, I'd think, well, this is going to be a lean month. And somebody calls me, something comes out of nowhere, and all of a sudden I have another month of new stuff to do that's challenging and interesting to me, and you meet more people. And so now I've got through another month, and it's been like that. And I'm very grateful. And I've learned that I could live on a lot less than I thought I could.
So you had mentioned earlier, a gentleman upsizing basically to a larger home, but you've also done a lot of downsizing projects as well too, or you've been, you know, approached to do so and have accomplished that. Can you talk a little bit more about that role of taking all that stuff we've acquired over our lifetime and downsizing that into a necessary smaller apartment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my referrals came to me involved organizing a project that involved moving a gentleman from his home of probably 1,800 square feet into a continuing care community. His friends thought that he needed probably assisted living at the time, so about 600 square feet. Okay. So that I took on that project. I knew this gentleman. His name is Paul, through church, and knew that Paul was gay and had no family at all, approaching 80, and people who were his neighbors, some people in the church, were getting increasingly concerned about him mixing up his meds, not eating properly, and so on and so on. So I said yes to that project, and I entered the whole world of senior downsizing, which is huge. And I worked with Paul every step of the way to help him to decide what to let go of. There's a lot of letting go. What can we take? How's it going to fit in the new place? finding movers, finding charitable organizations we could give what he wasn't taking with him, you know, and so forth, working with his, I'll call it family of choice. I'm a member of the LGBTQ community as well. I'm single, I mentioned, I'm also gay, and I also am a long ways from my family. So I could really empathize with his situation. And in that process, I found out there are a lot of Pauls out there, and you don't have to be a member of the LGBTQ community to be daunted by this process of leaving a home that you've lived in for a long time, maybe raised a family in, and so forth. So this is one of the things I love about this work is that I learned so much. So I had to learn a lot about the resources in the Columbus area that are and there are a lot out there to help people with downsizing. There are companies that will do this and so forth and so on. But for Paul, I did it myself. I mean, we found the rental trucks. We got things, found somebody to move things into the trucks and unpacked them. And then I helped him design. I got my interior design work in place, got his new home set up so that it looked like the home that he had before and brought his artwork over and so forth. So that's how I kind of got into downsizing.
And there's so many in our community, for whatever reason, are alone and are in need of getting rid of all that stuff, mm-hmm. getting rid of that burden. And there's so much emotion involved. They really do need somebody to help kind of guide them through that. What's her name? Marie Kondo. It has to bring you joy. Kind
right.
of thing.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Right. Right.
You really need somebody who can talk you through getting rid of stuff.
Respectfully.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. When my parents passed away, they had a 4,500 square foot house.
Yeah.
Including my father's two workshops, mm-hmm. machinist workshops. And I was bound and determined to find homes for all of their stuff and not just dump it at the Goodwill. Mm-hmm. And not disparaging Goodwill. They do phenomenal work, but that I thought there were other ways to creatively move stuff along.
There are.
And it's hard, but it's hard.
I just did that for my brother. So mm-hmm. the brother I mentioned just passed last month after a long battle with Alzheimer's. And his wife of 50 years by his side. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful to her because he never had to go into memory care. He was in his own home, except for the last week of his life. So I just spent 6 weeks helping her because she wants out of the house. She doesn't want the responsibility of a house anymore. And just finding homes for his coats. She wanted to make sure he loved winter coats. That they went to the homeless. So finding a charity that I would ensure that they would get to the homeless. We did that. He was a philosophy professor, lots of books, finding a new home for his books and so forth. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean about kind of doing this process. You need to listen empathetically to see where the heart is, what people are really attached to, what memories are associated with their things and so forth, and help them by asking questions. I don't tell people.
Yeah. Well, you know, this stuff idea, it kind of goes back to what you were talking about, refinishing that front door, that everything has a history, whether it's a hammer or a coat or whatever, that it was handled, held by somebody that knew how to use it mm-hmm. or would know how to wear it.
Right.
And it's kind of giving that respect to that person, giving respect to that item. Mm-hmm. That it's in the right hands. And then that person receiving it knows some history about that hammer or about that coat, and they give it the respect,
right.
The history.
Exactly right.
That you feel better about unloading the
right.
stuff. Yeah.
Well, and it when we talk about someone else's things and call it stuff, it is disrespectful. Mm-hmm. It's everything has an emotional tie to them.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. Yeah. It took me a year. It took me a year to deal with my parents.
That's stuff. Pretty good for 4,500 square feet of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 That it was, you know, their stuff, my stuff, and two sets of grandparents' stuff. So Mark, this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for your time, your expertise. We've really woven together several themes, looking at how does someone face that phase change into a new position, new phase of their life, but also how to make that change your own, feeling positive about what you're doing and excited about what you're doing, ready to get out of bed every day, and then also how it also helps other communities and other individuals. So thank you for all those wonderful messages. We always ask our guests if they have any last words of wisdom, and also if you have suggestions for other resources that people should consider that may be in need, because our listeners are kind of everywhere.
Well, a couple of lessons, I think, from my adventure, and it was an adventure. You know, we said, you mentioned the word adventure at the beginning, which is when you don't know what you're going to, you're going into the unknown. That's the very definition of adventure. Mm-hmm. So if you want to stay in the world that you know, you can do that. I chose to try some different things on, so it has been an adventure. The one thing I, again, for your listeners, would say, look up that poem, It's All in the State of Mind, because I think how you think has a whole lot to do with what you're going to experience. And I still have that sign on my wall. I can and I will. And because it's been every day, it was the thing that kind of encouraged me for the day. Someone once told me to avoid the binary trap, which is framing things in such a way as to focus on loss inhibits risk-taking and can keep you stuck. Instead, ask, what can you gain through change? So the binary trap is it's either loss or gain, and many of us tend to focus on the loss and so forth. And so I have gained so much by letting go of my formal education and human resources and all that training and so forth. I left. It's kind of like downsizing a house. I took the most valuable stuff from all those years of experience and brought it with me to the new phase of my life, and then acquired things that were appropriate to the new part of my life. And the third thing is I ride my Harley a lot, and I like riding it because it makes me be present. I've mentioned a number of times about being in my head and thinking too much. Thinking causes you to get ahead of yourself. Being on the bike, I have to stay present because I have to be aware of everything that's happening around me for my own safety and others all the time. So it makes me be present. And when you're riding a motorcycle, you look ahead, of course, but only to the next curve. And you set your eyes on the next curve. And when you set your eyes there, the bike goes there. Okay. But only the next curve. And when you get around that curve, then you can see where the next one is. And then you set your eyes on that. And I think it's a good metaphor for this kind of a transition in life. Don't get ahead of yourself. Be present to the day, because we have no guarantee of that we're going to have a tomorrow. My physician once said to me that you wouldn't, I was asking him about, you know, memory tests and so forth. He said, I have to tell people all the time, I have to give them bad news that hits them out of the blue about a cancer diagnosis or whatever. You know, it just reminds us we're not immortal. So treasure the day and just look at the curve ahead. That was me each day. Where do I need to go today? Let's get there. And then we'll see what's around the corner for the next day. That helped me on this adventure.
Yeah. Well, many thanks to our expert guest, Mark Mattson, the residential concierge, for joining us today. Listeners, thank you for joining us. You're going to find the contact information and resources we discussed in the podcast show notes and on our website at lookingforwardourway.com. We're looking forward to hearing your feedback on this or any of our other podcast episodes.
The views and opinions expressed by the experts interviewed on this podcast are their own and don't necessarily reflect the views of the podcast hosts or any affiliated organizations. The information provided in these interviews is for general informational purposes only and should not be considered as professional advice. Listeners are encouraged to consult with qualified professionals for specific advice or information related to their individual circumstances. The podcast host and producers don't endorse or guarantee the accuracy, completeness, or reliability of any information provided by the experts interviewed. Listener discretion is advised.